I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. As we await the decision of the Ninth Circuit Court on President Trump's travel ban, the executive order, which we hear the decision is not coming down today, so it means that tomorrow, it'll be tomorrow probably, but then we'll no doubt go to the Supreme Court. We thought that this hour we would look at refugees who have settled in Wisconsin and the people who are helping those refugees, what the history of refugees in the state has been and what the current status is. This hour, we will be talking with people who help refugees. We'll be speaking with the author of a very lengthy piece, author at the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, who wrote a piece just published, A Syrian Family Settles in Wisconsin Just Before U.S. Refugee Pipeline Closes. In Madison, Mayor Paul Soglin has vowed city police officers will not become immigration police for the federal government. The city will honor detainer requests for undocumented residents, people in residence here who have committed serious crimes. Yesterday in Milwaukee gathers in unity for human dignity. A resolution against the travel ban was passed, approved by 13 of the 15 Milwaukee older persons. And Milwaukee could be the first city to officially declare its opposition to the travel ban. We'll be welcoming phone calls. I'm sure we'll have many calls this hour. We'll have three guests the first hour of the program, starting with Dee Hall, co-founder and managing editor of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. A little later, Maysoon Shablat will join us, a volunteer who's helping settle Syrian refugees who are arriving in Wisconsin, and the executive director of Jewish Social Services in Madison will also be with us. We'll start with Dee. Dee, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
All right. Thanks for having me, Kathleen.
Yeah, thank you. You start your piece with, and I'd like to hear their story, a Syrian family who really had horrible situations in Syria, lived in a refugee camp and went through a very, very long process before they arrived in Wisconsin just before, as you say in your article, the U.S. refugee pipeline closed.
Yeah, so this is Rula and Abdul. They came from Syria. They arrived on Inauguration Day, which is interesting and symbolic. And then 1 week later, President Trump issued the travel ban, which affected not only refugees, which they are refugees, but also anybody coming from Syria, which is the country that they originated from. And so we caught up with them as they were shopping at the Istanbul Market, which is a little ethnic Middle Eastern market on Madison's west side. And the interview turned into kind of a refugee reunion, not planned by us. It turned out the owner of the market was had left Russia. He's of Turkish origin. He came as a refugee. And then a friend of his stopped in, and he had left Azerbaijan in the mid-1990s, also as a refugee. Hmm. So we ended up getting three refugee stories in one just in this brief visit to this market.
Hmm. And tell me about the process that Rula and Abdul went through, what happened to them and their home in Syria, how long it took for them to get here, and whether or not they knew they were going to come here.
So they went, they left Syria about 4 years ago. Their home was burned down. Syria is a place where up to 400,000 or so people are thought to have died as a result of the conflicts there, of the ongoing civil war there. They made their way to Jordan, as many of the refugees do. They initially lived in a refugee camp for a while. Their two young daughters, who are now ages 5 and 8, but at that time were younger, very young, were both becoming ill by this refugee camp experience. And so they were able to find lodging first within the city of Amman and then later in the suburbs. So it was 4 years from the time they left their home country until they could come to the United States. And they did not know that they were going to get to the United States. It was down to three countries. It was the United States, Canada, or Norway. So until just before they popped on a plane, they actually didn't even know where they'd be coming.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And tell me, what does it mean to be a refugee? What does that status mean, Dee?
You have to show that you are either being persecuted in your home country or that you have a serious threat of persecution. A lot of times these are based on, nationalities, like ethnicity, for example, religion, different categories that you might fall into that at that moment in time, the government or forces within your country are retaliating or are persecuting.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, because the ban has been lifted, are there other refugees, do we know, coming to Wisconsin during this brief period of time, or maybe it'll be a longer period of time, but during this time when the ban's been lifted?
I understand that there was a family of nine, a family group from Syria that was supposed to come to Sheboygan who were held up by the ban, but now who actually have been cleared. And my understanding is, through just reading USA Today coverage, that they have probably arrived now in Wisconsin.
Mm. And how many others? I think your article said 119 Syrians have come here. Is that right?
That was in 2016. So we looked back just at the previous year to see what was the refugee flow for Wisconsin and where were people coming from. And we found that in 2016, there were 1,877 refugees. They came from nearly 20 countries. And the top five countries were Burma, which sent almost 1,000 people, the Democratic Republic of Congo, which sent 262 people, then Somalia, Iraq, and Syria were the next three. And Syria, as you said, sent 119 people to Wisconsin in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Although the governor of the state said in 2015, as you remind us, that we would not be accepting Syrian refugees. So how did that happen? Does he have control over that?
Not really, no. A lot of governors sort of jumped in there to try to say they wouldn't allow Syrian refugees into their states. But the truth is, under the federal law, they don't really have that authority. I will say that under one of the executive orders, the immigration executive order, the president is looking at possibly giving states more say over that. But right now, it's a purely federal process that's run by the federal government with the help of the nonprofit agencies like Jewish Social Services.
And the number of people who have stood up to be of assistance to refugees in the state is really quite heartwarming, isn't it? It's been true in Madison, certainly. There was a big community gathering. There was a common council meeting expressing opposition to the ban here in Milwaukee yesterday.
Yeah, there's been a lot of pushback in Madison, which isn't too surprising. We're a very liberal blue bubble here in the state of Wisconsin. But the city council in Madison has come out against these bans and offered to become a safe space for people of any kind who are being persecuted. As you mentioned earlier, Mayor Paul Soglin has mentioned that, you know, the city would continue its policy of honoring, you know, detainers from the federal government for criminal undocumented immigrants, but they were not going to be plying the streets to try to figure out who's here legally and not legally. And then, of course, there was a community meeting a couple weeks back, right after the bans were announced, that drew, they were supposed to have a couple hundred people there talking about immigration, and they ended up with 2,000 people showing up at the Monona Terrace Convention Center.
Goodness, 2,000 people showed up. Isn't that something?
That's common for Madison. It definitely knows how to put on a big event.
Right. We're hearing today that the Ninth Circuit is not going to make their decision today. We'll probably hear sometime this week, I would imagine. Does this put a lot of the agencies who are working to resettle these people in a state of limbo? Do they feel that their agencies perhaps could go under or lose it? Well, they would lose, obviously, a vast amount of federal funding if there were a ban.
Well, it's certainly got to be a concern. I know that Wisconsin, for example, was served as a pass-through for $5 million in 2016 for money, federal money that is intended to benefit the refugees, and that money goes through the refugee resettlement agencies. There are a certain set of agencies within the state who handle those resettlement duties. And so I would imagine that some of those would see a halt in their funding if there's a halt in the refugee flow.
Mm-hmm. You've talked about this incredible outpouring of offers of help for the new arrivals coming here, people offering apartments and furnishings and jobs and translators and all kinds of things.
Yeah, it was very very heartwarming. I think Madison is a place that likes to celebrate diversity. If you walk up and down State Street, right near the Madison campus, between the Capitol and the Madison campus, you will find dozens and dozens of ethnic restaurants. Of course, we have professors from all over the world who've come here, and then many have stayed. So it is a community where we have an international reach.
Mm-hmm. And let's go back to Rula and Abdul for a moment. They have just arrived here. I keep thinking about they didn't know where they were going. Imagine that your fate is decided by somebody else completely and you're in horrible circumstances and you don't know where in the world you're going. You're going on an airplane to a place you had no idea you were going to be.
Yeah, I really can't imagine it personally either, but it is the fate of these refugees. They're already, for the most part, dislodged from their country. They've been on the move in many cases, living in these not great conditions. And so the uncertainty of just arriving in another country where you don't know the language seems to be the least of their troubles at that point.
Were you able to talk to them at all about those they may have left behind, concerns they have for those left behind, and whether or not they feel a little uncomfortable with the situation that that everybody is in right now with the ban being held up in court?
So we did not speak specifically about any family members that they had back there, but Rula especially did express great concern about the people left behind who are not able to either leave Syria or leave the refugee status in Jordan. She said she felt lucky to be here, but also sad for all the people that she knows that have been really dying to get to America, to Canada, to Norway, to other countries that are taking in refugees. And so we did not talk in detail about that, but she did express a sadness and a concern for those people and whether they would be able to do as her family had been able to do and find a permanent home.
Mm-hmm. I know that the president did call at one point in the last week for police in various communities all over the country to help with immigration enforcement. Should that happen, should this ban become a reality, how did the mayor of Madison respond to this?
Well, Madison has had a policy for quite a while, which he reiterated, which is that if you have a serious criminal, somebody who's in this country illegally and they've committed a serious crime, that the city has no problem with alerting immigration authorities to them being arrested. But what they don't want to get involved with is to go house to house or down the street or, you know, inquiring about a person's immigration status every time they have contact with the police. The fear there is that members of immigrant communities will not call the police when there's trouble. They will not report suspicious activities, that they will simply be afraid of the police, stay away from the police, and the police feel that in balance that's worse for community safety than having people who are here who are undocumented.
Mm-hmm. In terms of where refugees are placed in the state, you talked about those who will be coming to Sheboygan. There are some in Milwaukee now. There are some in Madison. Who decides all of that?
I believe it's up to the refugee resettlement agencies, but I think you'll have some more answers to that later in the show. There are individual churches that have become particularly active in this realm, and those folks will bring in groups of people often, and they'll end up settling in all kinds of communities, depending on where they've got a support network. I know when the Hmong refugees first came beginning in the 70s, that there were certain communities in Wisconsin that opened their doors to them, certain religious organizations. And so Wisconsin, Minnesota, and California ended up being the top destination for refugees from Laos who helped the U.S. back during the secret war in Laos and the Vietnam War. So it really depends a lot on the ground. Are there groups and individuals who have the wherewithal and the willingness to bring in these folks and help resettle them?
In your research, do you recall whether or not the Hmong refugees encountered the same kind of scrutiny and opposition that, say, Syrian refugees are today?
I don't know what kind of opposition they faced, but keep in mind that that was before 9/11, and a lot of stuff changed after 9/11. The number of refugees coming to the United States plummeted really right away, because all of a sudden we were concerned about people from other countries coming to our country. And so there was a dip there for several years, and it's still right now to this day much below what it was in the early to mid-90s. I do not recall whether there was a pushback with Hmong refugees. I know that there was the thought was that we owed these people, because tens of thousands of Hmong people were killed in their assistance to the United States during the Vietnam War and the secret war in Laos, and that we really owed them the chance to live because they were in danger if they stayed where they were.
That could be true of people in some of the countries in the targeted list as well, couldn't it? I'm thinking of Iraqis particularly.
Yes, Iraqis definitely. There are some Iraqis who helped the United States during our war there, and they feel now that they are in danger. Our top, you know, the people who are coming here as refugees, that's different from other forms of immigration. These are people who have documented fears or incidences of persecution in their home countries. And they actually go through a pretty, I don't want to use the term extreme vetting because that's the term that's being kicked around, but they go through a lot more vetting than many other immigrants do. Because first of all, they have to prove that they are a refugee, that they're facing this persecution, and then they go through quite a lengthy series of interviews and biometrics are collected, all kind of, you know, background information on them from multiple government agencies in their home country and the U.S. And so it's a pretty significant vetting process that they all go through.
We're talking about refugees in Wisconsin, the latest wave of refugees, the temporary lifting of the ban on all refugees and those from seven targeted countries. This hour of the program, Dee Hall is with us, co-founder, managing editor of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. She's just done a very interesting and lengthy article about a Syria family settling in Wisconsin. They had their home burned in Syria. They lived in a refugee camp, not very good conditions in Jordan. Their eldest daughter got sick. They had to move outside of the refugee camp for a while. They didn't know where they were going. And to boot, they just got into Madison the week before the executive order banning travel was put into place. And so it highlights their time in Madison, brief time, in the article. A little bit later this hour, Maysoon Shablat will join us, a volunteer who's helping to settle Syrian refugees arriving in Wisconsin. Dawn Bernay, Executive Director of Jewish Social Services in Madison, will also join us. Here's our phone number for you to be a part of this conversation. It's 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Madison has been very welcoming of refugees. Other communities in Wisconsin have as well. Milwaukee last night passed a resolution and approved by 13 of the 15 members of the Common Council, a resolution against the travel ban. Where do you think, as somebody who lives in Wisconsin, we should be? Should we welcome refugees with open arms as we await? Obviously, it's going to be more of a court process because whoever loses in the Ninth Circuit will probably appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. So this is not over yet. But in the meantime, how do we respond as people who live here to those who are here from other countries, to those who may soon join us from other countries? And what are your thoughts about whether or not we should be welcoming anybody to our state? We'd like to hear from you. And so we will in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. And we welcome phone calls now, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. We go to Beth in Green Bay for our first caller for you, Dee. Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, Beth. How are you?
Good, good. See, my question is, a lot of people that I talk to who are in favor of this ban, one of the reasons that they are in favor of it is because of their concern that it's taxpayer money funding these people to come to the United States, to come and settle in the state of Wisconsin. So I'm wondering if you could explain exactly what the financial impact to the taxpayer is.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the question. So in 2016, there was $5 million worth of federal funding. Again, the state doesn't really have any control over the amount of the funding. And that helped refugees find employment and housing. They could participate in W-2, which is the Wisconsin, you know, workforce program. Some cash assistance to look for work. Medical care. Most of this during the first 8 months. So this is something that the state of Wisconsin does not really have control over. The state's role in that is as a pass-through. I will say that this particular program, this refugee program, has been in place for about 40 years, pretty non-controversially, I think, most of the time. So that's where it stands, and the money goes through these resettlement agencies for the benefit of the refugees. And the idea there, just to clarify, these are refugees and not just regular immigrants. So they qualify for special benefits because they've been deemed to be people who are persecuting and must leave the country where they're living. Mm.
How hard is it for them, and I'm sure that our other two guests will know about this too, but do you have any sense how difficult it is for them to find their way in a brand new place, to find a job, to find a place to live, et cetera?
Well, I don't specifically know, but I do recall when the Hmong refugees first came, for example, that that was a culture that did not have a written language. And so you imagine going to a country where you don't speak the language and you don't read anything in the language, and then your own language itself is not necessarily committed to writing. And you know, you have people who have been, in some cases, living in these sort of camping situations almost for years.
Yes.
Children may not have been able to go to school. Parents may not have been able to work. In fact, most cases they can't when they're refugees. They may be part of an informal economy within a refugee camp, but it's a very difficult existence. And yes, you can imagine that the culture shock coming to the United States is very strong.
I would imagine it is. Beth, thanks for the call. Mylia, is it, from Madison?
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
So I come from refugee heritage. I am Hmong, ethnically Hmong. My parents and my grandparents were refugees. And my husband is a researcher here at UW doing research on refugees as well.
Oh.
And I don't think that Americans really understand the vetting process of how the UNHCR gets a person to become a refugee. You know, there is a long process to that. But my question to the speaker is, how can we as a community or as a religious group or whatsoever sponsor families, refugee families, to the United States?
And before you get an answer to that, can I ask you what your parents went through? Do you know their stories?
Yeah, so my grandfather was murdered. He was killed because he was ethnically Hmong. My dad received permanent hearing damage from deforestation chemicals that the U.S. dropped down. My mother went through emotional and physical torment to get to the other side of Laos so that she can get into a refugee camp. And both my maternal and maternal families lived in a barbed-wired refugee camp for years before they could receive any sort of help.
Mm. And they settled in Madison or somewhere else?
No. So what happened was they were sponsored by a Mormon family in Denver, Colorado, and they were able to be sponsored back then. And I've shared my story with many people to recognize that we have a moral obligation to help and assist those who are poor and in need, and especially those who are not in any way involved with a war that they never intended.
Mm-hmm. Dee, you want to respond?
Yeah, sure. Wow, what a powerful story. I think what I would suggest is to go to the resettlement agencies, and Lutheran Social Services is one, Jewish Social Services, Catholic Charities. There are a couple other organizations, and you can find them on the Department of Children and Families website. They have a listing of the resettlement agencies in Wisconsin, and I would ask them. They are on the ground working with these individuals every day. They can tell you what is needed, how individuals can help. I am not, I don't know what the limits of that are, if there are limits. I know that some people do feel very strongly that they want to give back and help these refugees, and I would go through those agencies.
Mm. And where did you grow up, Mylia?
So I grew up in the Twin Cities, St. Paul, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big percentage of Hmong people who are highly educated now, who have given back to society. And I just want to say that when you know, we open our doors to people who are in need, and I think that all of these refugees and immigrants have a determination of no other to come here to make the United States what it is, which is great already.
Thank you so much. We'll get some more information, so keep your pencil and paper out, because there will be more information this half hour about how you can help.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And joining our conversation, Dee is remaining with us, co-founder and managing editor of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Maysoon Shablat is also with us. Maysoon is a volunteer who's helping to settle Syrian refugees who are arriving in Wisconsin. And thank you so much for being with us. Hello, Maysoon.
Hello. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak in the public radio.
Yes, thank you so much for being with us. Dawn Bernay is also with us, Executive Director of Jewish Social Services. They're doing a lot to help people resettle in Madison. Thank you, Dawn, so much for being with us. Hello.
Hi, thank you so much for letting me be on the air with you.
Yes. Maysoon, tell me about your background. Are you a refugee as well?
No, I'm not a refugee. I came here like 4 years ago. I was planning to stay in my country, but the situation was not good, and my kids were born in here, so we came back to here so they can study college in here. But I have my family in Syria. My family, some of them are refugees, some in Turkey, some in Egypt, because they lost their houses, their jobs. So many of the Syrian families affected by this war, all the middle class Syrian people, now they are in need. They are poor people. They need help. So it's very bad. Everybody got affected by this.
And there are so many refugees, aren't there? I mean, so many people are either displaced. They're just not living in Syria anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot. Then only they count the refugees in the camps on Turkey or in Jordan, but there's a lot of people went to other countries, but they did not count it as refugees. There's a lot in Egypt, a lot in Saudi Arabia, a lot in... They go to Germany, to many countries.
Mm-hmm. Dawn, we've had a couple people who have wondered what the situation is for helping refugees once they arrive. There are a lot of good-hearted people in the state of Wisconsin. Can you, as a family, sponsor a refugee? And I guess the other question is, how many refugees are we getting during this time of uncertainty about what direction we're going? Is there a great need for help for refugees who are here now? What's the status?
Well, right now, Jewish Social Services was initially allocated, or we were told that we would be receiving 50 refugees during the course of the year, and we have resettled 3 families so far, so that for 12 people. We do have another 3 families in the pipeline, but we have no idea at this point if or when they will be arriving. And so in terms of getting furniture, getting apartments, those sorts of things, we're really on hold right now, which is unfortunate because there are 21 million refugees worldwide, and folks in Madison really want to help and have reached out to us to say, what can we do to help? And right now, it's really us taking a step back and saying we're not collecting goods so much anymore, but really focusing on the advocacy piece, on working with the families that we do have here to help make sure that they're able to get to their jobs, to help make sure that they're able to practice learning English. And for us, it's an issue of doing additional fundraising because the funding that we expected to get from the federal government is going to be cut off, and we still need to support our clients. And we're going to do that no matter what happens. Mm.
The money will be cut off if the ban is continued?
Correct, because we only get funded by the federal government for every refugee that we resettle.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have no new refugees, then there's no new income coming from the federal government. Jewish Social Services has a contract for the 12 refugees that are here that we will continue to work with them for 3 months. We have a history at our agency that we will work with people for as long as they need help, and we don't charge for those services. So we will continue to help, but part of it for us was the assumption that over time we would be getting additional refugees in that would help pay for the staff for refugees who are, you know, on different phases of moving to the United States.
I see. Maysoon, tell me about the process of being in a foreign country. You get on a plane. We were just talking about this the last half hour with Adi, who is still with us, by the way, not knowing if you're going to Norway or if you're going to the United States or Canada or where you're going. You get off the plane, and there all of a sudden you are in Madison, Wisconsin. You don't have a job. You don't really know the language. How do you find your way? How do you help people find their way?
Yeah, some of the families, this happened to them. They don't know which state are they going and what they're going to meet when they arrive. But they found a good help from the organization that brought them, like LSS, the Lutheran Social Services, or the GS. As the Jewish Social Services, and they found a good help from the community, from our community too, as a Syrian and a Muslim community, and that helped them a lot when they come here. But the feeling is for somebody who's coming to a mystery, they don't know anything. It's hard when they come here, and nothing can bring people. If they are not suffering more in there. People who lost their houses, their job, their hope, and they are looking for the light or for the hope. And they mostly care about the safety of their children. This is what they were saying. We came here just because we want a safe place and good education for our children. Mm-hmm. And this is what brought me here again too. It's our children that we need a good future for our children, a safe place for them to live and have good education.
Right. And school. Entirely understandable. Let's go to more phone calls. Wes is next in Racine. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Kathleen. Great show. Since I got put on hold, I think I maybe got an answer to my question. I was going to call to convey the great frustration and difficulty I had in getting connected with volunteer opportunities to help with refugee resettlement. And I imagined that might be due to an under-resourced agency, which sounds like that probably is happening, but then just this overwhelming volume of people to serve. And I'm frustrated and discouraged to learn that there aren't any, or that there's a bottleneck somehow. And so I can hope that things will change and I'll be available when it happens. But maybe as an alternative question, then in the meantime, you know, what are ways that a person can get involved maybe in a more believe that there's a lot of refugees and first-generation families that are living in a very hostile environment right now in the United States? Are there other ways to just connect and offer general social, emotional, material support for people like that?
Yeah, you know, Don, what do you say?
I would say that is wonderful to hear you saying that, and you pretty much hit the nail on the head in that people are so wanting to be helpful and with limited numbers of families and not wanting to overwhelm the families with too many volunteers and too many different volunteers. We have that constant balancing act. So a couple of things I would say to you. One would be to do things like reaching out to some local businesses or community to try and do something with bringing together members of the communities and the new families that are arriving. There's a restaurant here in Madison called Layla's that on Saturday and Sunday this past weekend, they did a brunch where they had people from the Syrian and Iraqi community help with cooking the food, and then Layla's Cafe donated proceeds to the families and to Jewish Social Services. And it was packed, and people were really happy to come together. It was a good, positive experience for everyone, and that was really helpful. I would also encourage you to think about what skills or availability you have. And if you can't volunteer with refugees, maybe find other opportunities in your community where you can sort of get on the list of volunteers for those agencies that are working with refugees. So, for example, our agency does a lot of work with seniors. The skill set of being able to drive people around is something that's important both for seniors and refugees. You can become a volunteer here, drive seniors around, and be part already in our volunteer cadre for the time when we do need more volunteers for refugees. So those are just a couple of different ideas for ways that you can be involved. And then finally, the whole piece on advocacy is really, really important, because if our legislators don't hear how we want to welcome the refugees, it's just not going to happen.
Can I put in a plug for literacy networks? Yeah, my daughter here in Madison works for the Literacy Network, and they see immigrants and refugees from around the world who are trying to learn English. And if there's such an organization in your community, I would look that up, because they do great work. It's often free or very, very low-cost English instruction to bring refugees and immigrants up to, you know, to improve their English proficiency. And so that's another way that you can help. Mm.
Super. Great suggestions. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Wes, so much for your call. Have you had any news on when the Ninth Circuit is going to announce their decision, Dee? And then I would imagine it goes to the Supreme Court. Your best guess on whether or not this is all going to be settled quickly or not? And then the second question is, how difficult is it going to be should this ban be reinstated?
Well, I think, first of all, I don't really have any additional information about the timing. This is moving at a rocket speed to begin with, so I'm guessing that speed will continue. It feels like no matter which way it goes, it will end up at the U.S. Supreme Court, because it's such an important issue and both sides are very dedicated to getting their point across. Whether it will create chaos or not, I don't know. I think the chaos was especially initially created because there appeared to have been a lack of groundwork that was laid by the federal government before this went into effect. And now we've had some time to think about it. Some of the agencies that are tasked with either enforcing the ban or carrying out whatever our refugee and immigration policies will be a little more informed this time around, regardless of which way it goes.
Let's go to other calls in just one moment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about refugees in Wisconsin, who is here, who has recently arrived, who is helping. How can you help? Our guests are Dee Hall, co-founder, managing editor of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Maysoon Chablat is a volunteer helping to settle Syrian refugees arriving in Wisconsin. Dawn Bernay, executive director of the Jewish Social Services in Madison. This is the Ideas Network. Back to phone calls. Eric is next in Columbia County. Hello, Eric.
Hi.
Hi.
It's good to listen to you. I've shut my television off and have 90.7 on now.
We like to hear that.
Yeah. So after the election, I was shocked, and then when I read the statistics that 80% of the Christian base in this country voted for Donald Trump, I wanted some answers, so I called the local parishioners and questioned them and said, what exactly is being taught in the churches today that 80% of the American Christians would vote for Donald Trump? And the Methodist minister told me, quote unquote, "I'd rather have a white supremacist in office than Hillary Clinton," and hung up on me. Mm-hmm. So I'll take your comment.
Well,
we're
talking about immigration, though. So what do you want? Do you have something to say about that?
Well, yeah, I think that when we have a white supremacist following, what chance does anyone trying to immigrate and getting acclimated into society have? What kind of chances do they have when they're starting out steps way back? I mean, they're starting out with such a disadvantage. It's really bad. It's really bad.
All right. Thanks, Eric, very much for the call. What about the national climate? How does that affect everything? Dee?
Well, I know locally, for example, there's some concern among the few refugees that we have here from Syria and other places that they don't want to be targeted by people who might not really know who might figure out who they are. And that's a concern that they have. You know, Madison has been very welcoming to these refugees, but I know there's a concern about the national political atmosphere, that it could lead some people to take action or to somehow, you know, discriminate against people who are here. And keep in mind, every refugee who comes is a legal U.S. resident. So, you know, there is a concern there that people will be treated differently and be treated poorly, even though they are legal U.S. residents. Mm.
John is next in Green Bay. Hi, John.
Yeah, afternoon. I just wanted to make a couple quick comments. A lady called in earlier, and she questioned what it's costing the U.S. taxpayers for these refugees. Now, there was a piece on national public television roughly a week and a half or so ago. I catched the whole thing. I think the study was done from like 2011 to 2015. It's costing the U.S. taxpayers anywhere from $17,000 a year to $60,000 a year. Nobody knows for sure for each individual refugee. And we've got so many problems. We don't take proper care of our homeless. We don't take care of our veterans like we should. We've got a lot of the mental people around that are doing bad things. And, I mean, they just want to push more problems on us. And I don't like Trump. But I tell you, I back him 100% with this whole immigration and refugee problem, because as far as I'm concerned, they can take the torch out of the hand of the Statue of Liberty and put a big stop sign up there until we know what's coming off.
What if you were somebody in Syria? Put yourself in somebody else's shoes for a moment, and your house was burned, and you're trying to raise a family, and there's all this.
I had my AK-47.
Oh, John. Well, there are a lot of people who share his sentiments. It's not as easy as getting an AK-47 and shooting everybody around you, I don't think. But this empathy, this lack of empathy for people who have very, very dire circumstances, you know, our humanitarianism. A lot of people have talked about this and how it seems to be on display or not on display right now. Let's talk a little bit about that. And let's start with you, Maysoon.
Yes. About the Syrian people who came to United States, many of them, or all of them, mostly all of them, they are start working and succeeding, and they are paying taxes. We have one family came here 6 months ago, and they are like fully integrated into the community. They are working, paying taxes. Their kids are going to school. They are giving a very good example about good people. So the people who are coming here are not coming to make problems. They are seeking safety and hope. Mm-hmm. And I watched a video 2 days ago on Facebook, or you can watch it on YouTube, called it's the story about a man who, his name Yassin, become Yassin Falafel. I recommend everybody to advise everybody to watch this video, because it shows what is the Syrian refugee. And when they come to America, every refugee, I know a lot of people, friends from Somalia, from Iraq, all of them in this country are working, are good people. Nobody is coming to this country to make problems or to take advantage of this country. And we have to always know, and before judging on other people, look on back on our history, on your history. Most of the people here are immigrants. So, and they came the same like us, like the Syrian people, and they are here for a long time. They become American. Now those people who are calling and talking, and they say that we don't need Syrian people or refugee from anywhere to come to our country. Let's go back and look to your history or your grandparents and see where all or you came from.
Yeah, it's the remarkable thing about America, really, is that we're an immigrant nation from all over the world. It's a unique, amazing thing about America. What about his comment that we've got too much on our plates, Dee? We really can't take this on. It's too expensive for us.
Well, I think he's probably echoing a lot of the support that we have seen for President Trump, the notion that America is not coming first, Americans aren't coming first, and we need to make some radical changes so that, you know, it's U.S. is always first in line for everything, and our people need to be first in line for everything. And so I think that is a reflection of that view, which, as it turns out, was the one that won the election.
Right. Let's go to Marion next. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Kathleen. There was a gentleman on a couple of minutes ago that mentioned the Statue of Liberty, and I would just like to try to get through this without crying, because this is what we stood for before. Give me your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. That's what we stood for. My parents were children of immigrants. Most of my friends were children of immigrants, and they were welcomed here. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. We haven't heard from you. Dawn?
Sure. To go along with what Marion just said and what Maysoon said, and going back to the beginning of the United States and the colonies, I mean, it was the Puritans and the Quakers who came because they were getting persecuted in their own communities. My family is fortunate to be here, and having escaped the pogroms in Russia and Nazi Germany in the 1930s and 40s, one of the things that has always been important to our agency is the idea of welcoming the stranger and protecting the refugee. None of us would be here if it weren't for that. And all the way through our history, you could make the argument, well, why are we doing this? We have poor people here already. Yes, absolutely. There are things we can do about the poor people who are here, but we also have to do something about people who are not here who want their children to be safe.
And we have time for maybe one, maybe two more calls. Connie is next. Hi, Connie.
Hi. Excuse me. My voice is a little hoarse today. First of all, I am in favor of taking in refugees and immigrants, and I know, I trust that the government or the people who vet them will do a good job. So, you know, that's what I believe. It doesn't mean that it's perfect and someone might get through that shouldn't have, but that's the chance we take. The second thing is, both my husband and I are senior citizens, and what can senior citizens do for those who have come to our country? I don't know that they'd even come to our area. We live in we live outside of town. We live in a rural area. And I don't know that any refugees will be coming here, although I know that the Hmong population had come into the Oshkosh, Berlin area, and I worked with them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm retired now, and I don't, you know.
What can you do? Okay, we're short on time. Let me give that one again to you, Dawn. What can she do?
I would, if you have a local United Way, I would connect with them to see if they have any thoughts about refugees in your community, or I would contact Oshkosh and see the organization that's working with refugees there, see if they do have groups or individuals who live in your community, because you might be surprised and you may be able to make those connections directly.
Mm-hmm. And there are refugees who have been here for some time who can still use assistance. It's not always an easy thing to assimilate rapidly. We have reached the end of the conversation. Dawn Hall, Dee Hall, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And Dawn Burney, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And Maysoon Chablat, thank you, our guests. Dee, the co-founder and managing editor of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Maysoon Chablat, volunteer helping to settle Syrian refugees in Wisconsin. And Dawn Burney, executive director of Jewish Social Services in Madison. Thanks to Marika Saval for producing this hour and to Colleen Duval for on-air work here in our studios in Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio. A reminder, Governor Scott Walker delivers his state budget address to the joint session of the Wisconsin Legislature. It's this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and you'll hear it here on the Ideas Network.